immortal B.B. King right there. Gone. 89 years old. Passed away last night. I'm telling you, I was very sad. First thing I read this morning, and a lot of B.B. King moments for me, and I'm sure, TDM, you have a pile of B.B. King moments. Well, what was your favorite moment with B.B.?
Good morning, boys. My favorite moment was getting to interview him in his dressing room at the Orpheum Theater when things had quieted down. He'd done his sound check, and he could just relax for a bit before the show started. And I found him remarkably... not so much sad, but looking back on his life, it took no prodding whatsoever, and I was close to tears by the time he finished. He was melancholy, is what it was. It was unbelievable. That was like 10 years ago. Yeah. And what a great life he led. And I remember asking him, it's ironic, is there a guitarist out there? I couldn't ask him who's the best guitarist because, you know, that's putting him in a spot. But I said, is there a guitarist out there who just amazes you? He said, it's The Edge. It's that young man called The Edge from U2. There's never been a better rhythm guitarist in the business than Edge. So there you go, those two together.
Well, when I interviewed him, I think it was about 10 years ago as well, I remember because of the diabetes, every time he played the guitars, his guitar, Lucille, his fingers hurt. And, yep. You know, as a guitar player, you know, you're calloused up. You never feel any more pain there. But that was the big thing. He played in quite a bit of pain in the latter part of his years. So, but what about you, Dave?
Well, here's the thing I want to throw, Terry, is that U2 playing tonight at Rogers Arena. Do you think they'll do? I gotta believe they're gonna do something special for him tonight. And so, if you're there, you are gonna be witness to some rock and roll history.
That's exactly to be in the right place at the right time.
Yes,
that's what you do. And he will stop. They'll make a point as Bono always would, and just honor the man. So it's fantastic, and I'm glad that they got together. You know, while they were both still around.
And the drummer, U2's drummer Mullins, his dad just died, and they flew back to Ireland just before the show. Can you imagine? Like they flew back on Tuesday or something.
Yep.
Went back to the funeral, came back, and, man, that's some dedication right there.
B.B. King. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. I didn't get a chance to go to the concert and may not go tonight, but I'm absolutely thrilled that they decided to spend their 2 weeks on the planet in Vancouver. It says a lot about us and them.
Yeah. No, it is. You see them driving around town. They're here, and I hear the review of the show. Fantastic, and whoever's going gets a chance to. Good for you. And
you know they're doing like they're doing 8 nights in a row at Madison Square Garden in New York City, but they start their world tour in Vancouver. That's the best part about it.
Yeah. Let's get on to the issue here with David Letterman. All right. And there seems to be some sort of debate or confusion about this because we've heard two different stories over the last 24 hours. Who's going to be the last guest, which is always the big deal? The story that I've got says that it's Bill Murray. There's another story that Jake has looked at and said, no, that it's going to be a surprise guest. But the surprise to me is that it would be anybody but Bill Murray.
It would be a total surprise if it weren't Bill Murray.
It's got to be Bill Murray.
Well, there's some surprises.
Because then Bill can destroy the set.
Yes.
To take a sledgehammer to it.
That would be perfect.
Well, I mean, he's already dug up the floor. You know, he's busted things.
Yeah.
He'll just blow it up.
You know, it's going to blow up. It's going to go right through the roof.
Real good.
It's going to be blown up as the Mad Max, man. Mad Max.
Now, what did you like about the first movie? Dave, what did you love about the first couple of Mad Max movies?
Do you know what I liked about them is that they had an edge to them, that they weren't overproduced. And there were some great, great moments. Yeah, that I get it, you know, Thunderdome and some good lines, well-crafted. But, no, the first two, I liked them because they were real, they had a real street presence to them. You know what I mean?
Yep. Little punky. How about you, Jake?
I like the cars and the motorcycles because I'm a car freak. I love the fact that, you know, he's driving a car with a blower in it. And every time he had to get away from the bad guys, he'd hit the switch. I'm going, here he goes. They're catching on you. Come on, Mad Max. Hit the blower. And the thing would take off. And the sheer violence in it and the way that these cats looked at a land that has been annihilated, and there's some good people left in it, and there's a lot of bad guys roaming it, and that's his job. He's just like a rogue cop, and he's taking on a lot of people. The first one to me was set the high bar.
everything that you loved about the first one in this reboot. But here's what we liked, I think, about the first film. The surprise of it, a completely new kind of Western, and it is a Western. A new frontier, it's lawless, heroes with flaws, and a director who took the audience right into the middle of the action, and it's all here now in Fury Road. Except this particular Max, Tom Hardy, is tormented by visions of a daughter that he couldn't save and characters who actually serve the story. But as good as Max is, it's Charlize Theron as a one-armed Furiosa who drives the war rig in this movie. She is absolutely fantastic. She's mad as hell, and she's running from the bad guy, and she's stolen all of his wives. And she's on the run with a war rig, a huge truck, and you're going to love this, because there's cars attached to the top of it that serve lookout posts, etc. And the bad guy, when he chases people, he has a heavy metal guitarist strapped to the front of his truck playing in the amps as they're it's chase music, and the guy's name is Doof Warrior. This absolutely blows the Marvel comic stuff out of the water. It's unbelievable how good this movie is. I can't believe that we've got this great gift for this summer.
Oh, I'm so glad to hear that. You know, and I wish Mad Max would chase down Sean Penn and run his lame ass over for sleeping with Charlize Theron. She's my girl. She's my girl. Not you, Sean. What have you got that I haven't got?
Well, he's got Sean Penn.
Shut up. Yeah, he's got Sean Penn. Yeah.
Well, okay.
I had a bit poor choice in men.
I'm sorry, man. Okay, so Pitch Perfect 2. Did you like Pitch Perfect 1?
Yes.
Okay.
I did.
All right. Well, it was a big hit, Dave. It was a big hit, okay?
I didn't see it, but I'll take your word.
Okay. This was directed by Elizabeth Banks. She did a great job. She produced the first one. She was one of the commentators in the first one. And it's even better than the first, believe it or not. Other than the fact that if you want to, I mean, they're disgraced on stage, I think at the Lincoln Center. And to recover their good name as a group, they have to win the Worlds in Copenhagen. And that's the whole story in a nutshell.
Course.
So Pitch Perfect 2. If you love the first, you'll love the second. Ethan Hawke is in a film called Good Kill. He's a top pilot, right? He's been reduced to sitting in a trailer outside of Las Vegas, which is a strange juxtaposition, and he's blowing up homes and cars and people via drones in Afghanistan. And the juxtaposition kind of really rips him apart. Bruce Greenwood is his boss and his friend, and they're a pretty good pair until the CIA takes over the trailer and starts to book attacks, which are very questionable, and he comes apart in front of his family and his friends, and it's a really good film. He makes good choices, Ethan Hawke. So Good Kill is also a film you might want to take a look at.
Well, that's the way films are going, and that's the way war films are going. It's all about
exactly.
The drones. It's all about the drones now.
It's all about the drones, and in fact, what they do is that they're in the middle of somebody's life. They're taking lives on another part of the world, and they walk out of the trailer and drive through Vegas. It's weird. It's really weird, the juxtaposition, but that's the way it goes down. So those are the
cool.
movies, the choices out there for you.
It's kind of cool, too, because I actually own one of these drones, these four-prop helicopters that has its own camera on it. And basically at Tuason Springs, I like to, at night with the night vision on, I'd like to go from condo to condo, just checking in to see if there's any action going on. And, you know, the resolution is TDM is very good. The quality is good. I can record, and, Mrs. Johnson.
Moving along, let me tell you what's on Tasty Room Radio. By the way,
hot,
it's on at
actually.
9 a.m. tomorrow morning because of the World Hockey playoffs.
Uh-huh.
So 9 a.m. tomorrow morning, and here's how it goes. We're going to do part two of our Naramata Bench special, and we're going to visit Poplar Grove, Monster Vineyards, Howling Bluff, and Black Widow. We're going to visit David Hawksworth, Chef David Hawksworth, who's a star. Joel Peterson, who is the godfather of California Zen. And then we're going to talk to Robert Clark because Sunday morning, the Spot Prawn Festival starts at the fish docks in Kitsilano. So,
yes.
And there's no, you don't know how long it's going to be around because once it's fished, it might be 3 or 4 weeks, but the prawn festival starts Sunday morning, 10:30, 11 o'clock, down at the, and everybody shows up, like 10,000 people show up. So I'm just letting you know what's going to be happening, and we're going to talk to him as well. And finally, let me tell you about your wines of the week. I wish you were here, because I've already started them.
You started without me.
That's great. That's right.
I figured you'd be walking through, really, I thought you were going to be at the Fairmont. I lost some more money. I bet, Dave, I said he's gonna stroll through here. He's gonna take the lovely drive, upper levels right here, and come in with the wine sampling.
If I could have convinced Mrs. Mulligan to join me, I'd have been there in a heartbeat. But Dave, what did Mrs. Mulligan say?
No.
That's the way she sounds. She sounds like Brenda.
Kind of, yeah.
Okay, do Brenda.
Dave.
Okay, now do Mrs. Mulligan.
I'm not going anywhere near that.
Totally different. Totally different.
Almost a Malbec from Mendoza, Argentina. It's a 90% Malbec, 6% Syrah, 4% Barnarda. It's $20. So I'm telling you this one, Almost is a wonderful, any one of them, their Chard, any one that they make, their cabs are fantastic. They're all around $20. So remember that name, Almost. But the biggie is Colomé, C-O-L-O-M-E, Colomé from Salta in the north of Argentina. This is a beautiful, I'm going to hold on to this bottle and pour it for you, my friend. This is 85% Malbec, and then a little bit of Syrah, Petit Syrah, Tanat, Cab Sav, stuff like that. But it is 4.5% alcohol, and it's a huge wine. It's $30. I cannot recommend it highly enough. Colomé, C-O-L-O-M-E, Colomé, a Malbec from Argentina. So one at 20, one at 30. Bob's your uncle.
We got to go, man.
Yep.
We got to go.
I'll leave you with this on this long weekend. We'll remember B.B. King. And we'll celebrate you too. Have yourself a great weekend, boys. Drive safe.
Thank you, TD. All right, there he goes. Off of the wild blue yonder, right here at TSN 1040.